Well, it goes like give you my version of who said what to who. Yeah. And when. I think Larry might have a little tuning episode here about lots of time. Larry here was born and raised in New York City, East 64th Street. And I'll just say his backyard was pretty much Central Park and the Fillmore East. I'm kind of jealous of that in a lot of ways, but I am not from New York City. I'm kind of from a different world altogether, if you could be from a different world and still be in the United States. But Larry, at the Fillmore East in Central Park, he could just walk through Central Park and just, you know, sit and hear whoever was playing on the other side of the fence. Would it be a fence or a wall or something? They had it blocked off, yeah. And then he had a family friend who was in the record business who would get he and his little buddy at the age of 12 into the Fillmore East regularly. At the age of 12, like every weekend. And he saw, I heard him reeling off on the radio today, all the people he saw. Jimi Hendrix, Cream, James Joplin. I mean, it just goes on and on. Wait, who was it you said, the one that they said, when they opened for so-and-so and they blew them off the stage, it was an epic world, you know?
I went to see Iron Butterfly. And the opening band, it was their first American appearance. It was Led Zeppelin. And it wasn't good for Iron Butterfly. In the middle of their show, people were yelling, Zeppelin!
So yeah, I hear Larry, somebody will mention some concert like that, and he'll go, I was at that concert. I was like, you know, from the age of 12.
Hot tuna.
My backyard was a cotton patch, and the side yard, and the front yard, and yes, I walked to school through a cotton patch. It's this high, yep. But I had shoes on, and it wasn't cold. Our parents, all of my friends were in the same boat I was in, and matter of fact, they would let school out. For cotton picking in the fall. I mean, you'd get out like 2 or 3 weeks from school because if they didn't let out, no kids would be there anyway because, you know, your parents had to have you in cotton patch to get the crops out. And they would start you off on a flour sack. Now, do I have to spell flyer to y'all? We've been north and east and south and west on this tour. Some people, it's F-L-O-U-R, you know, like the flyer. Fire used to come in, and they put a little strap on it, and that's how they'd start the little bitty kids picking cotton, and then you'd get to a tow sack. You know what a tow sack is? It's like seed used to come in it, and it'd be, I don't know, about that big, a burlap sack, and they'd put a strap on that, and that'd be your next sack to pick with, and then they'd move you up to a junior sack, and now it's getting into the ones like you've seen in pictures and stuff, and the adult sack, and by the time you got up to that, the machines had come in. By the time I was getting where I really, hate this cotton picking experience, you know? The machines came in. Thank you, Jesus. So I still can look at it with nostalgia, you know, instead of just like, oh, no, God, thank God I never have to pick a roll of cotton in my life. But my mother was really sweet, and this is a total detour right here. It's just because it's one of my favorite memories. And if your mama was real sweet, and she went along picking down the rope, now my mama was like all 90 pounds of her could pick with the men. I mean, she could pick some cotton. She's like the Energizer Bunny at 82 today. She would let you, as she went down the row after she had emptied her sack, and was starting over, she'd have like a little pillow of cotton down in the bottom, and she'd let you lay there when you were real little, you know, and you just lay there, and she's like inching down the road, picking cotton, and those cotton leaves are floating over your head, and that autumn light, and the kind of dust filtering through. It was a nice memory. As long as I was little, didn't have to seriously pick, you know. Well, we did not have Iron Butterfly floating through in West Tennessee, down there on the edge of the Delta. We did not have Led Zeppelin floating through. what we had, we were pretty well getting from the dirt in church, and didn't have a lot of records because people just didn't have money to spend on that. And you just made your own music. And then Larry starts researching what these Brits are bringing over and digging into what's making them sound the way they sound, and he's kind of gravitating over to the edge of the Delta where I was. And then by the time I got to New York City, I feel like it's kind of inevitable that we would meet, like the dirt met the city, you know? And I kind of grew up on the Louvin Brothers, and he made big brownie points when he courted me in New York City with the Louvin Brothers mix. Yeah, you see how I did that? And the first thing that was really said was the name of this next song, which is an old Louvin Brothers song, and I said it because I needed to say it. It was "You Running Wild." See how I did that, Larry? All right. We got a little time ahead of us. You can straighten it out if you have to.
Leaving me alone and running wild.
Nobody's gonna ease your lonely pain. You just, Trish and I just drove up here from Nashville. We were down there and stayed with our good friends, Buddy and Julie Miller, down there. And this is a tune I wrote with Julie Miller. So I had this melody laying around and asked Julie if she put some words to it, and she did. It makes me think of one thing, it makes Teresa think of something else. And I'm right.
Sounds like Mary.
But she can think of whatever she wants.
Tell them how you met Buddy and Julie, because I'm real jealous of this part too.
In the late 70s and early 80s, I played in a band with Buddy in New York. You know, Buddy was up there. Buddy and Julie were up there. And Buddy left, or rather Julie left at one point, and she went back to Texas, and Buddy said, we needed somebody to replace her real quick, and he said he knew a woman out in California who wasn't doing much at the time, and he called her up and asked her if she'd come and join this collection of knuckleheads that we were at the time, and she agreed, and that's how Sean Colvin got to meet her.
Oh, how about that?
She came and we did that for a while, and then Buddy split. He went after Julie, and John Leventhal came in and joined that band, and then John and Sean hooked up, and I went out on the road with Doug Somm, and then John and Sean did their first great record together, and then John and Sean busted up, and John hooked up with Roseanne, and Sean got married, had a baby, and did another couple of great records,
There was a lot there, but I can tell you I'm plenty jealous because that band of knuckleheads, as he said, not only played in New York City a lot, but they traveled around in a van playing honky-tonks.
Yeah.
And I missed that part of my education because I wasn't allowed to even look at a honky-tonk, much less walk in or play in one. I would have shamed my family to all eternity if I had done that back in where I was from. Really. So I'm jealous that y'all got to do that.
I'm here to love you tomorrow.
He says it's a good thing I didn't meet him at that time. So let's just leave one of them alone.
This song is called Midnight.
So many After the show, he said, is everything okay? Because some of the things you said in the beginning of the show, I mean, some of the songs, it's a joke. It's okay.
I had no idea that it would come off like that. It was real, you know.
Anyway, yeah, everything's okay. I merely just.
It's so much fun to give Larry a hard time. I do like the song, though.
Keep from backsliding. They stole.
gotten off the road with 8 years on the road with Bob Dylan. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, and in many ways that does deserve a round of applause. But I'll write that book some other time. And the routine with Bob, you know, one of the notable things about touring with Bob was, you know, you do these big shows and get up all this energy, you're on stage, it's a huge stage, it's a huge crowd, it's all this loud music, and it's, you know, great music, and you're playing and you're having a good time, and you're sweating and all that, and you've got all this energy, it's building up and building up, and the last song's over, you're off the stage, you're on a bus, and you're gone. You know, Bob didn't like to hang. So so you find yourself on this tube going down the highway, and it's a nice bus, but you're still kind of pacing around, and you got to burn off this energy, you know. And there was a time in my life when I would have done something stupid with all that energy, but my goal those days was to stay out of retox. So what I would do is lock myself in the bathroom in the back of the bus or the lounge and just play the guitar for hours. And the result of that was this record I did called Rooftops, which is my therapeutic, self-indulgent, all-acoustic guitar instrumental record. And tune I always like to play from there is written by the ancient Celtic harpist O'Carolan, who, if you ask me, is responsible for some of the most beautiful melodies ever written. And in fact, I didn't know this, but David Bromberg told me that O'Carolan wrote the melody upon which the English drinking song that became the Star Spangled Banner was based. So, okay, cool. Anyway, this tune. Teresa, as she mentioned, is from West Tennessee.
Got that job, I was trying to explain to my family it was a really good job. And my aunt said, he's so famous, how come I never heard anything he did? And I said, I figured she surely had heard Mr. Tambourine Man and blow it up, but she hadn't, he wrote that? That was him? So she did know a little bit. But that's,
so here's where we are with this.
They don't care for famous, right? Which I just,
I told Teresa's cousin I was playing with Bob Dylan. He said, Bob Dylan, ain't he that anti-Vietnam singer? Yeah.
I got down to the cotton patch.
So, anyway, so here's where Teresa's from West Tennessee. She's from a town called, and this, I kid you not, this, this a community, a farming community called Peckerwood Plantation. That was the name of that
place. And, it really is Peckerwood.
Peckerwood Plantation makes Mayberry look like Atlanta. Anyway, so she's fixing to prove it to you right here and now. And,
sing it if you know it.
And as I like to say, I'm from New York City. So I can't fix to do anything. You know, you can, you know, you can prepare to, you can intend to, and you can expect to, but you can't fix to. You can't fix, you can't reckon, you can't go up over yonder. Well, you know what she can't do? She can't forget about it. And I can't tell you how true that is. But she sure can go up over yonder, and here she goes.
She had good looks and cold black hair.
we didn't have a choir at my little church. We were kind of a happy medium, a Cumberland Presbyterian between, you know, the Baptist and the Methodist. And, you know, the Baptist would only dunk you, and the Methodist would sprinkle you, but the Cumberland Presbyterian was like, no, whatever floats your boat. That was kind of nice. But this reminds me of our song leader, Miss Elner, who looked exactly like Aunt Bee. Exactly. Hair, body type, everything. So she was the song leader, and my mother would sit behind her playing the piano right here. And Miss Ellen would get right in the spirit, and she would, her song would go flying in random directions, and the poor piano player would be like, needed to wear a helmet. It was very funny. All of a sudden. What you got for us, Larry? Something by my father's favorite singer ever.
Me?
I think you're right up in there, Larry.
Well, actually, what happened here was right before I left Bob's band, he had gotten this big, thick envelope full of unfinished Hank Williams lyrics that he was going to finish some and put music to it and do a record. And well, he got one of them done and decided he was going to pass the rest of them around. So Teresa and I were up there working with Levon, and he sent about a half dozen of them up there for Levon and I to sit down and finish one, you know. And we found one that had a title and a half a chorus and a verse maybe. And we looked at it and thought, okay, maybe we can do something with this. And we finished the words, put some music to it, and Levon said, yeah, man, we get this done, we get our names right next to Hank Williams on the song. And I'm thinking, yeah, if we get this done, I get my name next to Levon Helm. So we got it done, and it came out on a record called The Lost Notebook with, you know, the song Bob did, the one we did, and Vince Gill and Rodney did one. Nora Jones, I think, a whole bunch of people did stuff on there. Anyway, this is called You're Never Gonna Be Mine. We don't know what Hank thinks about it yet, but maybe we'll find out one of these days. Anyway. Always. Beginning of the better part of a decade of, as Teresa likes to say, musical nirvana. Just a wonderful time making music with Yvonne. One of the great things we did was got a couple of Grammy winning records out of the man, and the first one was called. Called The Dirt Farmer, and we're going to do the title tune from that record, The Poor Old Dirt Farmer, that Levon loved this song. It was, he thought it was an old Cajun, traditional Cajun tune, but it was written by Tracy Schwartz from the New Lost City Ramblers. And anyway, it goes like this.
Well, a poor old
pretty much against my mother's religion. I never got to see her dance, and she wouldn't let me take dance classes, and it was just kind of vaguely against her religion. I was never really clear on what the deal was. And then I found out later on that her daddy had got kicked out of church for going to a party that had a fiddle. Devil's instrument. You could go, they were like Welsh Baptist, missionary Baptist, had moved in there from off in the mountains in the early 1800s and just stayed there and kept all that seriousness. So they were pretty serious about the church thing, and if you went to a party, there were two kinds of parties. One was a play party, which was okay, and one was a party. The party had the fiddle, and that was not permissible. They called the same dances, the kids were dancing the same patterns, it was exactly the same, just one had a fiddle and one didn't. So he got kicked out of the church for ending up at one that had the fiddle, had to go back before the elders, apologize to get himself back in church. And so I never saw my mother. And when Larry came down to West Tennessee, it was a little like my cousin Vinny. He was wearing a lot of black, and, you know, he looked different, and he was from off. And they're kind of prejudiced against New Yorkers anyway, and, you know, it was a little dicey there. But he came tote the fiddle. And in Tennessee, my friends, that is immediate entree. So that now they don't care if I show up as long as he shows up with that fiddle. And one Christmas, we're sitting around, and my mother's from a big family. I've got lots of first cousins. We're sitting around this big living room. Everybody's around the walls. And Larry is really throwing down with some fiddle because he'd been working that year real serious on some jigs and reels and all that stuff. And he was really burning that fiddle up. And my mother spontaneously combusted and jumped up in the middle of everybody by herself. She's the only one who did it, and just cut a rug. Thank you, Larry, for letting me see my mama dance once in my life.
Go, Larry. Woo! Hey, Larry.
You can do it. I can do it to corrupt the morals of the mother. Here's a tune that I had the pleasure and the honor of co-writing with the legendary Mr. William Bell. William was the first male soul singer signed to Stax Records in Memphis back in 1961, before Otis Redding, before Sam and Dave, before Isaac Hayes and all those great people. And he wrote Born Under a Bad Sign, and You Don't Miss Your Water Till Your Well Runs Dry, and host of tunes for all these other people, and just a great guy, and he helped me with the lyrics on this tune, and it's called When I Stop Loving You. Thank you.
Burning bright, I don't wear them.
music tremble when she gazes at her crystal. She said nothing's clear, but I don't like what I see at all. She said it might be a joker with a white hat and paper soul. Oh, red-headed devil in command of a demon heart. Like he calls staring at the Beltane light. I can hear the bass strings humming. The good people think he's gonna be alright. Nobody knows what's coming, but it ain't gonna be a good
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
About 40 minutes from Jackson, Tennessee, which is the home of Carl Perkins.
That's another one that spent a little time in
our garden. And we put a tune on our latest record that Carl wrote, and it was on his first record. And I had the great fortune of getting to play a show with Carl Perkins at the Lone Star.
Who did you not play with?
Someday I'll write the book. But just a fine gentleman, and he's got a great charity in Jackson, too, the Carl Perkins Center for
the Prevention
of Child Abuse. And it's a really cool charity if anybody's interested in it. Just check that out. They do
it
well. Yeah. And, he wrote this off his first record, it's called Turn Around.
There will never be
coming out natural up here. Naked, if you will. Not literally. Thank you very much. It's an old tune from Don Watson and Cisco Rosen. It's called The Long Journey.
Yeah.